Blog Talk Radio.
It's great to have you, however, wherever and whenever you listen to the show. Always nice to have you join us. We are doing this here on a Sunday. Yesterday was a little bit chaotic. We were traveling. We were in Florida doing the show this weekend. So we had to change things up a little bit, move it over to Sunday morning. It's 11 o'clock here, East Coast time, 8 o'clock Pacific. And we have fantastic authors on the show with us today. We're going to kick it off with author Andrew Grant talking about his book False Positive, the first in a new Detective Devereaux series. And then we're going to hit it with Daniela Burnett and her book called Lead Me Into Danger. Want to let you know that all the shows here are sponsored this year by Kensington Books. So check out kensingtonbooks.com for more information on their releases and their authors. Great publisher to look at. And also go to darkrenaissancebooks.com if you're into more of the zombie ghost kind of occult kind of series. They are publishing some really great stuff too. So let's kick it off here. We had Andrew on last year with his book Run, and now he switched gears a little bit and decided to start with a new series. And like we said, it is his first in his Detective Cooper Devereaux series. So Andrew, always a pleasure for coming on. How you doing today?
Well, hi, John. I'm doing really well, thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here, so thank you for having me on the show today.
And like we said, the first thing is I got to get out. I got to say I'm extremely sorry for you and Aston Villa. Looks like they might be regulated in the Premier League. That's something that, you know, wasn't quite expected. But Tottenham is in the top four.
Exactly.
You know, things are looking up for 2016, maybe. Let's hope.
You know, things are dire for, you know, you're right. You know, Villa's been, a big love of mine ever since I was a tiny kid growing up in Birmingham, England. And it's just absolutely heartbreaking to see the state that they've got themselves into. So, I think you're right. I think relegation is pretty much guaranteed this season. So we just have to hope that they will come back next year stronger and, able to put things right then.
Yeah, that sounds for them. It is definitely the bad ending of a thriller book not going their way this year. So
exactly, they're the unsuspecting heroine who accidentally went into the wrong basement at the wrong time, I think.
Exactly. So. Don't open the center door. So. But now, so let's kind of get into your book here, because Run was a standalone, came out with great reviews. It was a fabulous book. You've changed things up, and you decided to kind of go into the series way, and you brought out your detective here, Detective Devereaux, and you have some things going on where, you know, you kind of started off with the heartstrings, of course, of any parent. I mean, a 7-year-old boy disappeared from his home in the suburbs of Birmingham, and, you know, that's always, when you kick that off, it's immediately like, this is a ruthless villain doing something like this. So you already have the scene kind of set up. So give everybody a little bit of in-depth into False Positive and maybe, you know, and why you decided to kind of jumpstart it with the series, Devereaux series, this way.
Excellent. Well, thank you, John. Yeah. And as you say, absolutely right. The last book, Run, was a standalone. So what I wanted to do was my first three books were part of a series. And then I did the standalone, which was a sort of line in the sand between the previous series and the new one that's just started with False Positive. And, as a writer, I think it's always good to try to challenge yourself and try to push your own boundaries. And it's very different to write a standalone. standalone rather than writing a series, because you know, it's different in two ways. It means that in some ways you've got more opportunities. You know, you can do potentially more things with the characters. You know, if you go to the extreme, if you write a standalone, you can kill the hero at the end of the book. You know, obviously you can't do that if you're setting up a series, because you need that hero to come back over and over again. So very different experience writing Run. I really enjoyed doing it. It was fun to be able to create a whole new world that was there just for the demands of that one story. But, you know, I really, as a reader, love to read a series. You know, it's my favorite thing to really get involved with a particular hero, and you know, each year look forward to the next installment, you know, look forward to visiting with that guy again to see what he's been up to, see what kind of trouble he gets into. So my heart has always really been in the series world, so I was delighted to start a new one with False Positive. And it all focuses around the hero, Detective Cooper Devereaux, who at the beginning of the book, Cooper is off on suspension. He's been accused of something which actually he didn't do. And that's not always the case with Cooper. He spends quite a bit of his time on suspension, and a lot of the time for things that he did do. So this time it was different for him. He was unfairly accused of something. But that accusation is withdrawn right at the beginning of the book, which means that Cooper comes back just in time to catch the case of the little 7-year-old boy who has gone missing from his home. And it becomes clear very soon that this little boy was an orphan, and he's been adopted by this couple. And that really strikes a note with Cooper, because when he was a child, his parents both died too, so he grew up as an orphan. So that adds that extra bit of urgency from Cooper's point of view. As you said, any parent is going to, you know, respond to the idea of their kid having gone missing. But with Cooper, he sees this extra connection in that he sees himself as that little missing, vulnerable orphan, him, you know, back from his own childhood. So he is racing against time, doing everything he can to find this missing boy. But the more he digs into the missing boy's background, the more, conversely, he discovers about his own childhood, including a revelation that really kind of shakes his world to the foundations and affects everything that he had believed about himself and about the world that he grew up in. So you've got this kind of parallel thing going, where you've got the actual investigation into the missing kid, and then you've also got the kind of virtual investigation into Cooper's own past and own life. So I had an enormous amount of fun writing it. It was fantastic to, you know, create this new character. And the book was set in Birmingham, Alabama, which, you know, is a place that I've been to and really enjoy visiting, but I hadn't written a book there before. So it was fun to, you know, really get to grips with the history of the place and, you know, the environment that he's in too. So, you know, it was wonderful for me to write it. And, you know, I just hope that people enjoy just as much if they read it.
So, now let's get into your character here, Cooper Devereaux, and let's talk about him and give people the understanding, because now this is the first book, and not only, of course, do you have to progress the series with, you know, the plot as things kind of move on, but he's going to also have to be progressive. So how much kind of background and how much things, you know, did you feel was going to be right for the first book to be able to kind of move him through the character in the series? Because, of course, you know, these are going to be ongoing series. You don't have a certain, you know, I'm not doing, you know, you're not going to sit there and say, oh, I'm only doing 5 books or 6 books or 7 books, whatever. This is going to be ongoing as long as you want to keep writing it, and, of course, as long as you feel that people are still reading it. So how did you kind of come up with the sense of you wanted to give only so much or kind of creation of him with this first book? It's kind of a, you know, it's kind of something that's a little give and take between the author and the character, I would assume.
No, that's absolutely right. And I think the way that I'm hoping it will work is that this big revelation that I mentioned about Cooper's family life, his own personal background, that, if you like, in my mind, that kind of brings him out of a state of suspended animation. You know, Cooper's been, in the years leading up to False Positive, that it explains that, you know, for at least the last sort of 7 or 8 years, Cooper's been cruising along, thinking that he has got a measure of himself and the world that he lives in and his job. You know, he thinks he's on a good track. But actually, he's really been, from a kind of emotional point of view, he's really been in a state of suspended animation. And the revelation that he comes upon really shakes him out of that state. It forces him to see himself and his family in a different way, and it forces him to reevaluate, you know, who he is, what's important to him, and what he wants. So, if you like, false positive has kind of pushed him, you know, this awakening that it causes in him kind of pushes him to the edge of a cliff, and, you know, he has to decide, you know, does he jump, does he come back, does he go right, does he go left, you know, so he's left with, you know, a lot of decisions to make about how he wants his life to develop. And, you know, I almost feel like I look at him, you know, he's a mature guy, he's a, you know, an established detective, but there's almost that sense in which, because of the things that he's discovered, he's kind of set back to being almost like a teenager again, you know, when he's in that awkward state of not really understanding who he is and how he fits into the world. So I think there's enough scope there to really develop him and show new sides of him as the series progresses.
Now, how scary was it for you to now, you know, kind of get out of the standalone thing? Like you said, you know, you can kill the good guy or the bad guy at the end. You know, you kind of wrap things up. But now you're jumping into a realm where certain rules apply, certain things have to happen. And, you know, how kind of nerve-wracking was it for you realizing that this was something you were going to start doing?
Well, you know, the points you make are absolutely valid there, but the way I actually felt about it was more of a sort of sense of relief. It was like kind of coming home, you know, because writing the standalone felt very different for me because I wasn't used to the demands of a standalone. So, you know, I thought I pretty much, you know, I had to figure it out as I went along. And actually, I really enjoyed it. And at the end of that, you know, when I started writing Run, I thought, well, I'm just doing the one standalone, then I'm going back to a series. But actually, when I'd finished Run, I thought, you know, I enjoyed that so much, I wouldn't mind writing more standalones. And I thought quite seriously about it. But in the end, I thought, no, you know, my heart as a reader has always been in the series. And I think that, you know, the best thing you can do as a writer is to look at your experience as a reader, because, you know, all writers are readers first and foremost. So I thought, you know, it is the series that I love to read, so that's what I'm going to do. So having made that decision, going back, you know, it's tricky with the first one because in the series, because you've got to create a canvas that's broad enough that it will sustain not just one story, but there's room on it for multiple stories, you know, and you've got to come up with a character, as you were saying just then, John, about, you know, the character has to have the scope to, you know, to grow and change and develop so that you're not really just telling the same story over and over, you know. So there were some interesting challenges there, but at the same time, I felt really, really happy about it. I felt, you know, this is what I want to be doing. So I was delighted to be back in the kind of series world.
And there's always a sense of comfortability, you know, when you start doing these things and you start writing and getting in. And like you said, you know, this was like your first love reading the series, so it was good to be able to start getting in and writing it. But how then, when you're creating characters and you're creating Devereaux, why did you feel he was the right one to launch now your new series career?
Well, that's a very interesting question, and it's one of those things where that's the sort of decision I feel you got to make. It's not something that you can purely reach from a sort of analytical, logical, from that kind of standpoint. It's the kind of thing, you know, that is going to be a part of it, but the main part is you've just got to feel that it's the right person. You know, this is somebody that you're going to be spending a considerable amount of time with every year for, you know, hopefully a long future. So it's got to be something that you just feel right about. It's a little bit like I kind of think, you know, if you're thinking about buying a new house, you know, or a new apartment, you can look at it on paper and say, you know, it's got the correct number of rooms and it's in the right school district. But it's not until you walk in through the door that you have that feeling of whether it could be your home or not. And it's that same kind of thing, you know. I changed direction slightly because when I was thinking about starting this series, and I was doing all kinds of research and background reading to decide which direction to go in, because obviously it had to be, you know, something connected to the world of crime. You know, crime fiction has to involve crime. And what I did was I started out by reading lots and lots of the memoirs of the FBI criminal profiling people. They've got some absolutely fascinating stuff that they did. And I thought about, you know, the kind of Silence of the Lambs sort of, you know, world,
yeah,
where you actually have the profilers, because there's some, you know, it's wonderful, it's so interesting, so cool, the stuff that they do. But in the end, I decided to take a sort of slightly different tack. I wanted to just go off at a bit of a tangent so that neither Cooper nor any of the main characters is specifically a criminal profiler. But when I was creating the villains, I think it's always really important to have good villains. You know, they've got to be, their motivation,
yeah,
has got to make sense. You know, what they're doing, however creepy or bizarre it might seem on the surface, it has to make sense to them. They have to think that they're doing the right thing, however wrong it actually is. And by reading a lot of this criminal psychology, that struck me that I could make better use of that as the sort of thing that will enable me to build the foundations of the villains. You know, so the villain in False Positive, for example, is getting up to some, you know, extremely weird stuff,
mm-hmm,
to you or me, but to the villain, it makes sense, you know? And that's what I think is so fascinating, that, you know, the you can divide crime into two broad categories. You know, the kind where it makes obvious sense what the person's doing. You know, if a bank is robbed, likely it is the criminals wanted whatever was in the bank, the money, the documents, the jewels, or whatever. But sometimes there are crimes which make no apparent sense. You know, the police will come across a crime scene which is just completely baffling to them. So I think it's amazing what those criminal profilers do when they come in and they start off with the evidence that the criminals have left behind and have to kind of extrapolate from that. You know, what was this person likely trying to achieve, and what kind of a person, what kind of background would the person have, what kind of level of intelligence would they have, would they be organized or chaotic, would they, how much would they plan, how much would they be opportunistic. You know, try to work back from the remains that are left, you know, the devastation that's left in their wake, and work back to, you know, the kind of person that could have done it. And, you know, it was a really fascinating process doing that. And it ultimately, you know, I was really excited. I felt that I'd come up with a good balance of rooting the character in a place, you know, Birmingham, with a definable job, you know, being a detective, with all kinds of you know, weirdness around his own personal life, which is revealed during False Positive, but then also with access to the world of that is revealed through the profiles of the criminals that he encounters. And you know, I'm working on the sequel right now, and it's been great. You know, there's so much material, and so much of it is just incredibly thought provoking when you read about, you know, you try and put yourself in the head of one of these people who thinks that acting in these extreme and outrageous ways is not only normal, but, you know, they're actually the right thing to do. It's very strange.
Yeah, and you know, and you brought something up that was very, very important, that authors and readers, when they read, and I want to remind everybody here that we're speaking again with author Andrew Grant, and it's his latest book called False Positive, the first in the series, in his newest Devereaux series. And the one thing that you brought up is, no matter how batshit crazy a villain is, there's always a motivation for doing what they're doing. Very, 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 very rarely are they just so batshit crazy that that's why they're doing what they're doing. There's always a motivation. And to be able to bring that out brings the depth of character to a villain, which, yes, I believe is important, even if not a little bit more important to drive a story than the hero.
I agree with that.
Very
John, yeah.
Important. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, you know, my personal approach is always to, you know, if it's a series, you know who the hero is. But before you start thinking too much about what they're doing or why, I always start off with who is the villain and what are they doing, because you're absolutely right in what you say. I mean, in very rare cases, and, you know, cases that aren't all that interesting, you might get somebody that wakes up in the morning and says, I'm going to go and commit this horrendous crime because I just get off on it. That's that's possible,
right.
but rare. What's much more common with these kind of cases is the person gets up in the morning feeling like they're taking the next step on towards their destiny, mm-hmm. or on some journey that they're forced to take or that they must take. You know, even where you get people committing horrendous murders, sometimes they will believe that they are helping the world. You know, there was one case that I read about, for example, of a guy that went and killed a whole load of young teenagers. And he believed that he himself was evil, and but he believed that there were other people just like him, these younger versions of himself. So he believed that by going and killing these other people, he was actually helping the world. He was saving the world from there being lots of copies of him in it, you know. And it's mind-boggling, really, to think that makes sense to somebody. But you've really got to understand that if you're going to be creating a character where they do those kind of things, because if they're just running out, you know, looking for cheap thrills, it's not very interesting.
Right. Now, the one thing, another thing that I want to bring up, because I want to talk about real quick, and we're running out of time, and it's been so fascinating, we could do this for an hour.
Absolutely.
Of course, you know, when people hear you talk, of course, you know, they notice the British accent. So.
Uh-huh.
Now you decided to set things, and then they see Birmingham, and they're like, oh, I know Andrew. You know, he's a British writer. Oh, this must be set in Birmingham, England. But you picked Alabama, of all places in the South. I mean, a very, very diverse setting, a very unique setting, much different than a New York or a Chicago or a Miami or an L.A. You pick Southern Alabama, sets of civil rights unrest and many different things, you know, civil war, and very rooted in their Southern ways. And that setting is now could be a possible character, which a lot of people are doing. Of course, you'll lose the plot setting. So why was it important for someone, of course, of your background to jump in instead of a New York, Miami, Chicago, to set things in a town of Birmingham, Alabama?
That's, you know, people ask me that a lot, because, you know, a lot of people don't immediately associate an English person coming over and wanting to write about Birmingham, Alabama. But there are two reasons for it. The first reason, the main reason, was that in order for the story to work, it all hinges around this huge revelation about Detective Devereaux. And in order for the story to work, I knew that it was going to need to be set somewhere where you could have two or three key scenes in a kind of log cabin in the woods. But that log cabin needed to be within striking distance of a reasonably big city. That was just the kind of demand of the way that the plot was going to work. So, you know, I'm sure there must be thousands of places in the States where you could find somewhere where you have, you know, cabins in the woods not too far from a big city. But the only one that I had personally been to, and the only one that I knew anything about, was Birmingham, Alabama. So, first of all, I thought, well, I know that it fits the bill, so why waste time looking for, you know, why fix it if it ain't broke? I know that it will work. Why waste time looking for something else just for the sake of it being something else? And secondly, you know, I'm actually from Birmingham, England, and I like that sense of symmetry that, you know, I was from one Birmingham and I was writing about another Birmingham. So, because actually Birmingham, Alabama was named after Birmingham, England, so I thought it was, you know, the name came from one Birmingham to the other, and I've come from one Birmingham and been to the other, so I thought it, you know, it was a nice little piece of symmetry.
And now, are your plans to kind of have things still set around the area, or do you think that in later books, you know, Cooper is going to experience other parts of the United States, maybe international, you know, the different kind of things they're going to do? Have you put those thoughts into your head yet?
Yeah, I have, you know, and I think I don't have a definitive answer, because, you know, the closer you get to writing each book, the more in detail you go with the planning. But what I have roughly sketched out in my head is that the majority of the books, probably 90% of them, certainly 80, will be set in and around Birmingham. But I will try to allow the possibility for, you know, if there's a particular case that I want him to be involved in, or if there's something that's topical that I want to explore, you know, have him maybe go elsewhere in the United States, or even maybe over to London or something like that. So there's definitely scope for that, but I'm not in a position just yet to say, well, you know, book five will be here and book seven will
right.
be, you know, that will kind of occur to me as I go along, I think. And part of it will be based on how people respond to things. You know, I've had some really great feedback about Birmingham, Alabama, you know, partly because a lot of people don't really know but they know of it, but they don't know the city that well, you know.
And it's a very tech city. It's a very high tech city, and people wouldn't think that down in Birmingham, wouldn't think
no.
about that, but it is.
It's right. And, you know, and people, this is one of those funny parallels. People say, you know, write what you know about, and in some ways, of mm-hmm. course, they'd say, well, you were born 4,000 miles away from Birmingham, Alabama. How would you know about it? But, as you say, it's had to transform itself from a heavy industrial city to a high-tech city. And that's exactly the experience that I went through in places that I lived in the UK. So, you know, the experience of a community having to change the way it thinks about itself, you know, change the way that, change how, where it goes to work and how it works, you know, that's universal. So I've seen what happens under the skin, you know, the fact that it was on a different island doesn't really make much difference. You know, you understand what it's like to be living in a place that's going through that kind of transformation. And, you know, I just feel, you know, I was born in a huge industrial city. I lived in a second big industrial city in the UK. And I just, you know, it sounds maybe weird, but I just really feel a connection to places where big, important things are made, you know, the things that shape the world around us. That's where these things come from, you know. And I just really like that. It gives it a sense of importance and a sense of permanence, you know.
Now, so we got about a minute and a half left, so real quick, because I want to ask this question, too, because I'm a father, you're a father, and you decided that your first case was going to be a 7-year-old boy disappeared. How hard was that to write, knowing, of course, you know, as being a parent?
It was very hard to write because, you know, it's really every parent's nightmare, and it was difficult. You know, I kept having to really kind of close off my imagination in a way, because if I strayed to thinking about it being one of my kids in that situation, then it was just, you know, too difficult to do it. So it really that was probably, you know, emotionally the most difficult thing I've ever had to write. But, you know, people always say that you should challenge yourself and push yourself into the, you know, uncomfortable areas, because that's hopefully when you do your best work. So, you know, even though it was hard, I kept pushing myself to do it, and you know, eventually did get to the end of it. But you're right, John, you know, absolutely, as a parent, it's the most difficult and the most traumatic thing to think about, really.
So, all right, so why don't you let everybody know, you know, your social media, website, things like that they can get you and contact you, and where they can, you know, if they have any questions, email and things like that to you.
Absolutely, yeah. My website is andrewgrantbooks, that's all one word, .com, and there's contact info on there. I'm also on Facebook. If you just search Andrew Grant on there, they've got a regular page and an author page. And on Twitter, I am at Andrew_Grant, and I'm always absolutely delighted to hear from anybody who has a good question or any feedback. So, you know, there's three ways there to get hold of me. So if anybody has anything they'd like to follow up on, I would be delighted to hear from them. And anybody who's around in Chicago, I'm going to be at the City Lit Bookstore this coming Saturday the 30th, with two other wonderful authors, Michael Harvey and Elizabeth Heiter. We're going to be doing an event. And then the following day, Sunday the 31st, I'm going to be in Scottsdale, Arizona at the Poison Pen with Alifair Burke. So if anybody is around in Chicago or in Scottsdale, it will be wonderful to see you at those events.
And it's going to be a hell of a lot warmer in Scottsdale than in Chicago, so that'll be good.
It certainly is.
All right. Andrew, we want to thank you again so much. It's always a pleasure. You know, keep in touch. Let us know what you got going on, and we can't wait to talk with you on the next book. And have a good one.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, John. I can't wait to be back on the show. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, again, everybody, that is author Andrew Grant. The book is called False Positive. It's this first book in his newest Devereaux series. You can find it wherever books are sold. Go to Amazon and pick up your copy now, ebook, hardcover, wherever you want to look for it. Go to andrewgrantbooks.com, of course, for more information on all the information that he has on all his books, including Run, which was a fabulous standalone book, which came out last year, and that's a good way to, you know, get him going if you wanted to check out that. So, we are going to take a quick break, and we will be back with our next guest. Her name is Daniela Burnett, and we will see you all in about 2 minutes. Listen to this. Mm-hmm.
Night I sing, you shake and I tremble. Night I sing, it's all inside.
Everybody here after the break. Again, we want to thank Andrew for being on, such a wonderful author, great friend Andrew Grant, and his latest book is called False Positive. We're going to jump now into another author. She emailed me, and she had her latest book out, and so I started looking. It's actually her first book in a series, and the book is called Lead Me Into Danger, and I started checking things out. I said, very exciting thing. This is why we have the show, to bring on authors, make sure they all have a voice out there. They don't have to sell a million copies. I don't care if you sell one copy. If you write an entertaining book, I want to talk to you. So her name is Daniela Burnett, and the book is called Lead Me Into Danger. So, Daniela, we want to thank you for coming on. How you doing?
Fine, thank you, and thank you very much for having me on and giving me this opportunity to tell everyone about Lead Me Into Danger.
Absolutely. I mean, it's the time where, you know, marketing is more important than actually writing a book now, to try to get yourself head up, you know, above the masses of people going on Kindle and buying books and, you know, trying to figure out who's who in the writing world. So we want to thank you for coming on, and we want you to, you know, let's just jump right into it and give us a little bit about what Lead Me Into Danger is, you know, and why you kind of decided, you know, this would be the first book, like, in your new series. So the thoughts behind all that.
Okay. Well, Lead Me Into Danger, the two main characters are journalist Emmeline Kirby and jewel thief Gregory Longdon, and they are former lovers who haven't seen each other in 2 years, but they run into one another, and after she witnesses someone to try to murder a friend of hers, a fellow journalist, and they try to find the murderer, and in this hunt for the murderer, they come across a Russian spy in the British Foreign Office, and things just take off from there, and the book takes place in Venice in London, two of my favorite cities.
Yeah, now you kind of, you know, you kind of do something that's a little different with your characters, which, of course, is, you know, you have a journalist and then you have a criminal,
yes.
Basically, you know, working together and doing things. So that's a very unique dynamic, you know, when you're writing a thriller book. And then you did set it over, you know, you're going to be over in England, and you have it over in, you know, with Russia and a bunch of other things coming across with Venice, and you have a lot of moving parts going together. So what was the biggest kind of challenge for you in writing a book like this with such dynamic characters, you know, that you have to work upon, with a thief and a journalist, and how all these kinds of things work together? And then, like you said, the tension of being, you know, a formal lover and all those things happening. That has been a lot of moving parts for you to try to get together.
Well, the story just came together in my mind. Yes, journalist Emmeline wants to find the truth. That's part of her core belief, finding the truth and making sure that justice is done. And Gregory, although he's a jewel thief, normally a jewel thief is considered a bad guy, but he's not quite a bad guy. He's also interested in finding the truth. You know, as a gentleman, it goes against the grain to let a murderer go free. So in that sense, they do have similarities, but, you know, they have their opposites do attract. And there is a lot of tension because of the romantic suspense, because of their past. So I think all of that adds to the story. It helps propel the story. And the settings, you know, I've been an Anglophile since I was a little kid. So naturally, when I started writing a story, it had to be in England. It had to be in London. And the two characters, Emmeline and Gregory, they're both British. So those were some of the ideas that were spinning around in the back of my head when Lead Me Into Danger came together, so to speak.
And now the book has been out since October 1st. And
yes.
So it's been out now for a couple months. What's kind of the feedback that you've received, you know, from fans, and how have they kind of reacted to it? Was it a way, because a lot of the times, a lot of authors, you'll receive stuff from fans, and you'll be like, I can't believe they were interested in that. Did they not see the whole other part that I was trying to, but they were talking about this part, really, like, you know, like a really small part of the book. Did you kind of get some of those surprises, and leads you when you write book two, maybe, to maybe change some things?
Well, not quite that. They're like, oh, well, this should have been this and that should have been that. No, the reaction I've had from everyone who's read it so far, they're like, oh, I love this book so much. Oh, I have to tell my book club. I have to tell my mother. I have to tell my sister. So I was really excited about that. I mean, naturally, I thought the book was good. But, you know, and I based it on my mother and my sister are always the first ones who read my book after I write the manuscript. But when you have other people, you know, friends or just outside people saying, oh, I really love this book. This is one of the best books I've read in a while. You're so good. I mean, that's so exciting to me, especially as a new author. That's so it makes me really happy.
Yeah, because, you know, you wrote some poetry books before, and now you've kind of jumped yourself here into the mystery thriller genre. I mean, you know, a much bigger jump to be able to kind of do that. What kind of apprehensions do you have? I mean, how nervous were you, I guess, when you were trying to get all this together, jumping in, you know, from something totally different genre into this now?
Well, actually, it was the other way around. I mean, I had always been writing stories and since I was a kid in school, and I actually was writing mysteries and so on before I started with the poetry. And I had the idea for the series, you know, in the back of my head, you know, a small little kernel of an idea. But then I started focusing more on my poetry, and the result was the two poetry collections. And then, but still, as I was working on those, the story for Lead Me Into Danger was still swirling around and swirling. And then once I finished the second poetry class, I was like, you know what? I'm ready now. And then I sat down and I wrote Lead Me Into Danger. And actually, it is the first book in a series. And before I sat down to do Lead Me Into Danger, I had the idea for the first few books in the series in my head before I started writing Lead Me Into Danger. Because since it is a series and the characters continue on, you know, you develop a little something, you drop it in the first book, you develop it a little more in the second book, and so on. So I had to have that plan in the back of my head to how the books are going to move as I go forward.
Ah, fabulous. Now, when you're sitting here, and like you said, so you've had this plan for quite some time, and the characters started to come together, and then you started working the plot, and then you started to have to build, you know, your story, and you had to build your secondary characters. Which secondary character do you think was the one who kind of pushed himself or herself more to the forefront and had more of a voice than you originally thought, and is maybe somebody that you can see moving forward and having maybe a bigger talk or a bigger voice as you continue to write this series?
Well, definitely the secondary character that has a very large voice is Chief Chief Inspector Oliver Burnell. And, you know, I had the idea from, you know, you have to have a police one, you have to have the law there and so on. And then there's this clash between him and Gregory. Gregory has always eluded his grasp. I had the idea for Burnell in my head. But, you know, as I write, you know, there's always this conflict, this cat and mouse between him and Gregory, and it just develops more. It just seems to, every time I put the two of them together, the words, their conversations just seem to take off from there, more than I even thought in the back of my head. So, Burnell is always going to be a secondary character, but I think if you look in each book, he's developed a little bit more as the stories go on because I like him. He's a little bit gruff, but he's empathetic. He understands people and so on. And he likes Emmeline, which I like too. I like Burnell. I have a soft spot for him.
Yeah, and I think that that's kind of where the fun comes in constructing the book, because you get to have those wacky secondary people. You can kind of do a little bit more freedom, a little bit more stuff. And if it doesn't work, it's okay. You just move to the next book, and you can just create somebody else and see what kind of does work. And when you finished it, and you finished the book, and a lot of people love to hear the journey of now you finished the book, but now you're just starting the brand new road of being able to try to publish the book. How was that journey to get yourself going with Black Opal Books and getting published to where you are now?
It was a long, difficult, bumpy journey, just to let you know that. Because once I finished the book, I was like, okay, now I'm going to send it out to some agents and see, you know, I'll figure, you know, a few months, keep sending out queries, get no answers or no, not for me. I'm like, okay, I started the second book. Finished the second book, the same thing. I went on to the third book, same thing. I still couldn't find an agent. And then I was like, you know, the big houses, you know, like Random House and Harper, and so they don't even look at you if you don't even have an agent. So I said, okay, I love writing. I want to get my book published and so on. I didn't want to go the self-publishing route, so I looked at smaller presses that don't require an agent. I thought maybe I might have more of an opportunity that way as a stepping stone. And I did the same. I sent out the query, the little synopsis, and then finally Back Opal Books was happy. The acquisition center said, oh, I thoroughly enjoyed this. You know, I'd like to offer you a contract if you're interested. And I'm like, am I interested? Of course I'm interested. And I told her, I was like, just to let you know, Lead Me Into Danger, it can stand alone, but it's the first book in a series, and the second and third books are completed as well. I get an email back, well, I can give you a three-book contract if you're interested. And I said, yes, very quickly. That's how it took off from there. So when I signed with Black Opal, I signed a three-book contract. But actually, in December, I just finished writing book four. And I'd like to take a little break in between each book, you know, to let the idea for the next one percolate in the back of my head. And soon I'm going to be starting on book five in the series. So that's my long, bumpy journey.
But now that you're kind of in the fray and now that you've kind of passed that point, the hard part now is, of course, getting it to buy, because a lot of the marketing falls to you. You have to do a lot of that. I mean, very, very few. I don't care if you're with Random House, Simon & Schuster, Penguin, or Omega Difference. You got to do the kind of marketing. And how has that dynamic been? Because a lot of authors, you know, you're in pajamas, you're in front of your computer, you don't talk to a lot of people, but now you have to come out and you have to talk to people like me, and you got to do blog stuff and you have the radio things.
Yeah.
How has that been for you?
That's been more difficult than doing the writing and writing the books, because I didn't anticipate, because I also have a full-time job. So, you know, it's difficult squeezing in the time to write to begin with. And now I also, in terms of this marketing and promotion, this is a whole new aspect that I did. I mean, I knew you had to do it, but it was more than I had anticipated at the beginning. Like, I wasn't on Facebook before I started a Facebook page. I had my website. I had to do a Facebook page. And then also, you know, in terms of getting the word out there, you know, like contacting someone like you, would you be willing to do a review or an interview? You know, it's just the thing is to get your name out there, the, your name, the book's name, as a way to try and get people interested. You know, like with Suspense Magazine, you focus on thrillers and mysteries. I mean, this is the, our audience I'm trying to target, and I'm trying to find different ways where I can find my audience. So in terms of publishing and writing, the marketing and promotion has been the most difficult thing for me.
Yeah, and that's what I tell always. I always tell people, writing the book, that's the easy part. Getting people to buy the book, that's the hard part. And that's the part that, you know, you have to get yourself, you just have to throw yourself out there. And a lot of it is, you know, you throw it out there, you see what sticks, you see what doesn't stick. But once you start kind of getting more comfortable with that, I mean, it seems like everything then will start falling into place and you start understanding all of that and start realizing, you know, the different things that you, that people ask, because every interviewer is different. I know that I'm strange and I know that I'm different and I ask different questions than a lot of other people do. And that's kind of the thing that you have to kind of maneuver yourself around. It's almost like a mystery book. You don't know really what you're going to get until you get into it. You had no idea really how it was going to be until you kind of got into it.
Right. Yeah, no, it is because, and first of all, I don't think you're strange. I think you're very nice, but, it's very, and you know, for me too, it's like, it's even more difficult because I'm a self-conscious person to begin with. So all of this marketing and putting myself out there, it's difficult for me. It's like, I just write. That's what I do. You know, this other aspect is a whole new world for me.
Yeah, and so when you were writing and when you went from book one and now you're into book two, like you said, now three and then four, did you kind of look back into book one and say, you know, there were some things in there that maybe, you know, Lead Me into Danger that you wanted to change, you wanted to focus yourself into a different writing, or you wanted to challenge yourself into a different way? Was there something that people are going to notice when they move on with the series with you, maybe how you progressed as a writer or certain things that you focused on, maybe you focused more on scene development, maybe you focused more on dialogue or things like that?
No, not really, because like I said, before I started writing Lead Me into Danger, I had the idea for the first few books in my head. So I knew how I wanted the story to progress. I knew how I wanted scenes and so on because I had that plan in my head. And actually, in terms of each book, I don't outline. I know a lot of people outline. I'm not like that. But I do like to plan the entire story out in my head before I sit down to write the book. Because, of course, I'm going to change things. I get a new idea along the way. But I like to have that basic skeleton of the plot to follow that's like it's A and then scene B and so on. That's just the way I am. I mean, I know other writers work in different ways, but that's just the way I like to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that that's important. You kind of stay true to who you are, but one of the things that, you know, a lot of authors do, you know, when they start writing series is when you are figuring out your characters and they're talking to you and you're going past the point, like we just had Andrew on, and this is the first book in his series, but he's written several standalone thrillers. Are you conscious of the storylines now that are going to be going on between Emily and Gregory and how things are going to move and progression along, of course, with the plot, because it's almost like two separate storylines running in tangent where one of them will stop at each book, but then one of them will continue forward.
Yes, no, I'm very conscious of that because I know how I want them to, you know, I know what the next step is. I know what the little secret is that I dropped in the first book that I'm developing more in the second. So it's very important. I'm very conscious of that as I'm writing the story. Like as Lead Me into Danger was going on, it's like, okay, I have to put this little hint here, drop this little nugget because I'm going to develop it more in book two, you know, in terms of Gregory or in terms of Emily. I'm very conscious of that as I'm working along because it's this mystery, but this is a step to the it's a stepping stone to the next one. So I'm very conscious of the two dynamics as they twist together.
And are you attending any book conferences or anything? I mean, have you gone out there and kind of seen some book conferences like a BoucherCon or Killer Nashville, Malice, things like that, that you're going to start going out and attending and start talking more in the public realm and seeing some more authors and things like that?
Well, I haven't attended any so far because, as I said, you know, I do work full time too, so it's
right.
a matter of that as well. But I'm a member of the Mystery Writers of America New York chapter, so I participate in a lot of their events and I get a lot of exposure that way. And the Mystery Writers of America has been so supportive of me before I started my, you know, before I was published, and now I get a lot of good advice from my fellow members. It's just a really nice group, and you know, it's nice to be able to talk to someone who understands what you're going through, because other people,
right.
you talk to them and they're like, oh yes, well that's nice, that's a nice little hobby. I'm like, writing is not a hobby, you know. It's nice to be able to it's nice to be able to talk to someone who understand the problems that you're going through, or if you have a plot problem, you know, to talk it out with someone. It's just nice to have that.
Yeah. And you know, and one of the people that read your book and I see reviews is a guy that we have talked to in the past, John Hegenberger. And you know, he's written, you know, some books and things like that. So you've had some now you've had some fellow authors, you know, starting to kind of blurb and do those kinds of things back and forth. I mean, doesn't it sometimes become a little surreal, I guess? You kind of step yourself out and you're like, God, how did I get here?
Yeah, it does, because it's like, you know, after struggling for so long, I can't believe that, you know, Lead Me Into Danger has finally been published, that the second book, Deadly Legacy, is going to be coming out later on this year. It is surreal, because it's like, you know, this is my dream and it's finally happening. I'm finally living it. I can't believe it.
Now, who, you know, what authors did you kind of read, you know, before you started writing into mysteries? Do you have some favorites that you you read and people that, you know, that not that you emulate after, but just people that kind of got you thinking, hey, I can do this and I can do this genre and kind of like inspirational maybe?
Well, you know, I've been a reader since I was a little kid. I was always reading. I'm a voracious reader. I read everything. But mysteries and thrillers were always my favorite. And growing up, Agatha Christie was my favorite. I think she's just the grand dame of mystery, because the way she, you know, she really understood people and human nature, and the way she intertwined her plots and then finally, you know, presented the solution to you. I just thought she was a master. But in terms of like more contemporary authors, Susan Elia McNeil, I love her work. I love Charles Finch, Tasha Alexander.
well, you do know James Berry too, right?
Yes, I know. That's why when I heard it just before, I was like, oh, Tasha Alexander. I also love Daniel Silva's books. So, you know, a lot of, you know, things influence, and I don't try to emulate them, but, you know, it's like, oh, that's really, you know, they amaze me. And also Tracy Grant, too. And also Susan Elia McNeil, Tracy Grant, and Lauren Willig. I was corresponding, sent them emails even before I was published, saying, you know, look, I love your books, and I'm struggling. Do you have any advice for me? And all of them, they all responded to me, gave me some advice, gave me some moral encouragement, and that's really nice, because it shows that they remembered how hard it was to start, and they were willing to help somebody else, and I really appreciated that.
Yeah. Now, do you think that when you know, going on with the series, are all your books going to now, are they going to be set internationally? Are you going to move things just into United States, or kind of, how do you kind of see that happening?
Well, I mean, Emmeline and Gregory, they're both British, so, I mean, it's pretty much going to be set in London or in England, or, you know, if they their adventures take them off somewhere, but it's pretty much going to take place in Europe.
Okay, and now, being, of course, when you write about Europe and the deep history and the richness that, you know, Europe has, this will be more international, jumping around, you know, like you said, from London into Paris and different kinds of things. Are they going to bring some history of those things in? Are you going to, you know, some historical kind of fiction comes around? Because I see a lot of that happens when they write about, you know, European things, because the history is so rich and so deep and the things that happened over there.
Yeah, I mean, that plays a part of it, you know, like looted Nazi art and things that harken back to the World War II. Elements of that are in the next couple of novels. So, yes, that'll influence the books. And then, you know, I've been to London and Venice, you know, several times, and I love those cities. So, you know, I like to set the books in places where, I mean, elements of it, it's where I've wandered or places that made an impression on me, and then I try to transmit that when I do my writing. So a lot of different things come together when I put the story.
Well, we have about 45 seconds, a minute left, and what I want to like to do is I want to give you like the last word to be able to let everybody know, you know, your website and where they can find you or contact you and everything else. So I will leave that all up to you.
Okay. Well, I have a website. It's DanielaBurnett.com. That's DanielaBurnett. You can find me on Facebook. I'm on Goodreads as well. And I look forward to answering anyone's questions. There's an email address on my website if you want to send me an email. That's dmburnett@yahoo.com. I'm open to anybody's questions or just if you have a little note you want to send me, I'm happy to hear from you.
Wonderful. Well, Daniela, we want to thank you so much for coming on. It's been fabulous to be able to speak with you. And we wish you nothing but the best and good luck and look forward to it.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye. So again, everybody, that is author Daniela Burnett, and the book is called Lead Me Into Danger. It is out now. You can check out DanielaBurnett.com for more information. We also want to thank Andrew Grant for being here and talking with his latest book, False Positive. We are going to be switching gears right now, and I'm going to jump out and jump right back in because we're going to be doing a special show with author Lee Swift to talk about his latest book that just came out. It's more of BCT, and I know I screwed it up. Blood, but at least I'll say it right when I get on because he'll tell me. And so we're going to be taking a short break, and then we're going to be coming back, but this episode ends, and the next one will begin, so hold on.